Now, we're going to start properly at our tour. If I was in real life, I would be starting here in Westminster, the seat of government. And this yellow part here represents that. And there, actually, all of your pictures are in the way for me here, but Big Ben is around the edge here. I'm sure you can see it, but there's Big Ben in the picture anyway. But down here is this other part, Victoria Garden South. And there's a particular statue that I want to show you. And that's where we would start if we were doing this in real life. I'm sure you'll recognise her, especially with this sash. This is Emmeline Pankhurst. Appropriately, I think, being overlooked by Parliament. And it's impossible to talk about the women of World War I without talking about the work of the suffragettes, because so many of them were engaging in such important work for the war, and they put aside their campaigns. It was not universally accepted by all of these suffragettes that that would happen. Indeed, two of Emmeline Pankhurst's own daughters vehemently opposed this policy. Nevertheless, that's what happened, and they did some splendid work for the war effort. Prior to that, of course, they had been engaging on a campaign of civil disobedience, and they were arrested and put in jail and force-fed. And this is Emmeline being picked up and arrested by a lot of angry men because she was trying to present a petition to Buckingham Palace. That's what this picture is here. But I want to show you another picture of one of her other arrests. And that's this one. Now, this is Emmeline here, being supported and held up by this woman here, holding the umbrella to shield her from the sun. A very indignant nurse and some detectives. When the women were being force-fed, the public revulsion became quite widespread, and the government was getting quite concerned about this, thinking that they might lose their seats next time. So they passed an act that became commonly known as the Cat and Mouse Act, whereby when a hunger striker was nearly dead from starvation, they would release her, she would recover her health, and then she would be re-arrested to finish off her sentence. And that's what's happening here. The lady with the umbrella owns the house that this arrest is taking place outside. But I want to tell you a little bit about this nurse, because I think she's rather an interesting character. Her name was Catherine Pine. And Catherine was devoted to Emmeline Pankhurst, looked after her in all of her periods of recovery from the Cat and Mouse Act, went abroad with her, did many, many things to help. But unlike other authority figures who ran nursing homes where the suffragettes would go to recover, she absolutely refused to break the law and would not help them escape arrest. And I just thought that was an interesting little character thing about her. And the lady with the umbrella here, that is the composer Dame Ethel Smythe, and I'll be telling you much more about her in a moment. But she owned this house, and Emmeline was a frequent visitor to it. After many decades of peaceful attempts to get the vote for the women, and after some violence had occurred by the police and by men by throwing them physically onto the ground, Emmeline felt that they'd better have a period of civil disobedience, and they orchestrated a stone-throwing campaign. The only trouble was that Emmeline couldn't throw straight, and she kept missing her target. So Dame Ethel here invited her to have a go on the common and in the garden of her house to see if she could actually learn to just hit a target. And she said at one point, the stone from Emmeline's hand flew backwards, narrowly missing my dog. But she never actually did quite learn to throw stones properly. So let's talk properly then about Dame Ethel Smythe. Here she is. She is the famous composer. She became one of the most significant composers of the late 19th and earlier 20th century composers. She was born in Marylebone in London, and her father, who was a military man, got promoted to general, and they moved to Frimley. She declared from an early age that she was going to be a composer in her own right. Her father vehemently opposed this, but nonetheless, she went to Europe to study, and she became great friends with Grieg and with Tchaikovsky, and had very much a war of words with Brahms. And in 1922, she was made a dame for her services to music. She wrote something like 6 operas and many other pieces, and one of the operas, The Wreckers, and her Canon in D were so well received when they came out. She also wrote the anthem for the suffragettes, The March of the Women, which all the suffragettes in the country would sing as they marched. And it was very, very rousing, with march, march up with your song, cry with the wind, for the dawn is breaking. And when the suffragettes were let out for their exercise in Holloway Prison, they marched around the triangle, singing this song as loud as they could. And on one famous occasion, she leaned out of her cell and conducted them and kept beat with her toothbrush. Also, prior to her arrest, she managed to get past the porter in 10 Downing Street. She got up to the drawing room where there was a piano, and she realised that the cabinet were meeting next door. And so she banged out the tune on the piano so that they would hear her. At one point too, actually, she threw stones as well. And the person that she threw the stone through, his window was, he was the anti-suffrage colonial secretary called Lewis Harcourt. And he made the remark that if all women were as wise and as pretty as his own wife, he would grant them suffrage immediately. She took exception to that and broke his window. She was arrested immediately and taken to Holloway Prison. Now, when the war broke out and the suffragette campaign was put aside, as I said earlier, their efforts turned to the war effort. And Ethel was no exception to that. She went to Italy initially to join her sister and a lady, Helena Gleichen, a painter. And they raised an ambulance service in Italy and indeed were decorated for valour on the Italian front. She later went to Paris, this time not to promote her music, but to train as a radiographer. And she passed her exams and was attached to the 13th Division of the French Army as a volunteer localizer in a huge hospital in Vichy. However, this really did put pay to a lot of her composing, because she just felt that she couldn't compose under these conditions. Later, she was in Egypt, which is where this picture was taken of her writing. And she said this in her memoirs. I wrote that book, Impressions That Remained, while doing radiographic work in a French military hospital, locating bits of shell, telling the doctor exactly how deeply embedded they are, watching him plunge into a live, though anaesthetised, body, shall prove you either an expert or a bungler, is not a music-inspiring job. But writing memoirs in between whiles was a delightful relief. Ethel was ahead of her time in so many ways. Not only was she defiant about following her career and wanting women to have the vote, but she was very keen that women should really reach their full potential. In many ways, the things that she said about women then are the sort of things that you sometimes see now in women business gurus helping women to get ahead now. For example, this one. I feel I must fight for my music because I want women to turn their minds to big and difficult jobs, not just to go on hugging the shore, afraid to put out to sea. Now we're going to leave there and we'll just stay in the House of Commons for a little while. I want you to look at this statue here of Millicent Garrett Fawcett. Now Millicent was actually one of the chief people of the suffragist movement rather than the suffragette. She and Emmeline did not see eye to eye at all. And Emmeline Fawcett wanted to keep things, sorry, Millicent Fawcett wanted to keep things much more peaceful. But she was instrumental during the war in doing this. This grill here. Now, this is the ladies' gallery and the top floor of the public gallery overlooking the House of Commons, where all of the parliamentary procedures happen, all the debates. And as you can see, it was crowded with ladies. It was hot, it was airless, it was cramped, it was dreadful. If women wanted to see the procedures of Parliament, this is what they had to put up with. And some of the suffragettes really objected to this, so they chained themselves to these grills. And the only way they could get them off was to remove the grills. And so the grills and the woman attached to it were taken away that way down the stairs and had to be sawn off. And Millicent was instrumental in getting them officially removed right in the middle of the war in 1917. And there it is. Men are taking down the grills. And some of those grills still exist now, actually. They're not where they are, but actually as a reminder as to what happened at that time.